everybody. This is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio mobile app. We're continuing our look at the book of the prophet Daniel from the Old Testament. It's our Old Testament reading this week during Mass, and you would have heard this reading if you were listening to the Relevant Radio Mass just now, which airs prior to this program. You would have heard a reading from Daniel chapter 2. I want to explain it to you. It's pretty exciting, but I think what I'll do is I'll read the entire chapter of Daniel 2 because obviously the first reading was only a selection of it, but I think we really need to look at the whole chapter to get the story. So this is going to answer some really important questions for us for our life today. For example, where can we find the wisdom of God today? Does God still speak to people in dreams? These are all really important questions, but let's get to Daniel's world first, and then we'll talk about how it relates to us. So I'm going to read from Daniel chapter 2, and it's kind of one story altogether. It's kind of unique. It's all contained in this one chapter. And I'm going to be reading to you from a different Bible translation than one that I normally use. My go-to is the New Revised Standard Version, Second Catholic Edition. But right now, I'm going to read to you from another one called the New International Version, just because I think it reads a little bit better. It's a little bit clearer as it relates this story in English. So here we go. This is Daniel chapter 2. It says, "In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled, and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, 'I have a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means.' Then the astrologers answered the king in Aramaic, 'O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it.' The king replied to his astrologers, 'This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me.' Once more they replied, 'Let the king tell his servants the dream and we will interpret it.' Then the king answered, 'I am certain that you are trying to gain time, because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is just one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me.' The astrologers answered the king, 'There is not a man on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the kings except the gods, and they do not live among men.' This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, 'Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?' Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, 'Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He sets up kings and deposes them. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king.' Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, "Do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret his dream for him." Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, "I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means." The king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, "Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?" Daniel replied, "No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that pass through your mind as you lay on your bed are these. As you were lying there, O king, your mind turned to things to come, and the revealer of mysteries showed you what is going to happen. As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me not because I have greater wisdom than other living men, but so that you, O king, may know the interpretation and that you may understand what went through your mind. You looked, O king, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, but not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were broken to pieces at the same time and became like chaff on the threshing floor in the summer. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace, but the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream, and now we will interpret it to the king. You, O king, are the King of Kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed mankind and the beasts of the field and the birds of the air. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over them all. You are that head of gold. After you, another kingdom will rise, inferior to yours. Next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. Finally, there will be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, for iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things to pieces, so it will crush and break all the others. Just as you saw that the feet and toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. As the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of a mountain, but not by human hands. A rock that broke the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold to pieces. The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true, and the interpretation is trustworthy. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery." Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in his charge of all its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court. Okay, so that is Daniel chapter 2. And you're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. So we're looking at this chapter, and obviously, it's such a powerful and dramatic chapter, and we see that King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, we already saw last time that Nebuchadnezzar has captured some of the items from the temple, and he's also taken back with him some of the leading lights of Israel, some of the children of the nobility, Daniel and his friends, and he has put them in his service. And Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar, has this dream, and this dream really bothers him. So he calls in the pros. He calls in really what we today would consider to be maybe psychologists, you know, the ancient equivalents, all his magicians, all his sorcerers, all his astrologers, and they were responsible for telling the king what the meaning of his dreams were. Now, here's the problem. The king decides to test them. And what he tries to do is say, hey, first of all, before you can interpret this dream, you got to tell me what the dream was. And they're like, king, we can't do that. You got to tell us first. He says, well, if you don't tell me, I'm going to kill you. I'll know that you guys are fakes. No, please, you got to tell us first. Okay, now I know you're trying to buy time. This is ridiculous. And so he orders for their execution. This is not a good scene at all. And the Babylonian magicians and those of that kind of an ilk, they would always look at sort of the indications from the natural world, you know, what the pattern of the skies were, dreams. They would try to interpret dreams. But again, you got to tell them the dreams before they can do anything with it. And this is where Daniel comes in, the prophet Daniel, because this is where pagan religion and religion that worships the true and living God, the worship of Israel in the Old Testament, this is where it kind of overlaps. If you look at it as kind of a Venn diagram, the Babylonians believed in a lot of pagan stuff, but the Israelites believed in what the true God had revealed to them. But where they kind of overlapped was both of these cultures believed that God spoke to people at times through dreams. And of course, as we're reading this chapter, it's hard not to think of Joseph in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis. And we did a great series on the book of Genesis. It was called the Genesis series, oddly enough. And you can find that on the show page in the archives at relevantradio.com. And we looked at Joseph in the Old Testament, how he got to such a high position in Egypt. At the time, he was in prison. He was at his lowest point. And the Egyptian pharaoh had a dream about seven skinny cows and seven fat cows. And Joseph was able to interpret that dream for him, that there's going to be some skinny years of famine ahead, and the king better prepare for this. And Joseph, of course, in the end, he is the one that saves Egypt and his family, Jacob, and all of his brothers from certain death. And so there's a lot of parallels here with what's going on in Daniel chapter 2 as this wise Israelite is able to interpret the dream. And so we don't really know why King Nebuchadnezzar would not tell his royal interpreters the content of his dream, but we do know this. It was probably a test. If we're guessing, we would have to say that he's testing their integrity. He wants to know that they're really authentic. Maybe he's having some doubts. Maybe he thinks, now, maybe Daniel and his friends, maybe their God is right. Now, remember, Nebuchadnezzar, he's kind of a polytheist. He worships many, many gods. So keep that in mind as we go on. At any rate, obviously, when these guys could not interpret the dream, Nebuchadnezzar orders the execution of all of the wise men of Babylon. That includes Daniel as his friend, as Daniel and his friends. And so this is where Daniel's great wisdom really comes into play. If we look at verse 14 and following in Daniel chapter 2, it says that when Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, why did the king issue such a harsh decree? And then Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. And then Daniel goes in and he asks for time. He says, king, don't do it quite yet. Just give me some time. Let me see if I can come up with an interpretation for you. Hey, might as well give it a shot because we're all going to die anyways if I don't do this. So I might as well ask him for a bit of time. So he's granted this time. And then Daniel goes back into the house and he's got his friends. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, obviously, as we know from before, their names were changed. They were given Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It sounds like the three Russian hockey players, but no, they were Babylonian names. At any rate, we have their Hebrew names here, so this is their true identity. Daniel goes into the house and says, this is what happened. So they do really the only thing they can do. Their backs are against the wall. They need to pray. They ask God to reveal the contents of the dream to Daniel so that they won't be executed. And that's exactly what happens. God, during the night, reveals everything to Daniel. And this is so great. Daniel, in the morning, he praises God and he says, praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He sets up kings and deposes them. He gives wisdom to the wise, knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. So why did Daniel try to save not only he and his friends, but also the Babylonian, sort of purveyors of mystery, the magicians, the sorcerers, the astrologers? These guys are pagans. Why did he care about them? Well, it's because really he loves even his enemies. He loves even those that don't believe as he does. And he wants their salvation. He wants them to come to a knowledge of the truth. And this very much parallels what Jesus does in the New Testament. In the Gospel of Luke, chapter 6, this is what Jesus says. I say to you that here, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. To him who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from him who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your coat as well. Give to everyone who begs from you, and of him who takes away your goods, do not ask them again. And as you wish that men would do to you, do so to them. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you'll be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the selfish. Be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. So Daniel loves his enemies. He loves everybody around him, even though they don't know his God, the one true and living God. And so that's why he wants their lives to be spared, as well as, of course, his life and the lives of his friends, too. And so Daniel, when he thanks God, this is just incredible, because he puts credit where credit is due. He thanks God for revealing it to him. And when he goes to the king and he interprets the dream for the king, again, the focus is back on God. Daniel says to King Nebuchadnezzar, he is the God in heaven who reveals mysteries. So this is what happens. He goes to the king and he breaks down the dream for him. He says, I'm going to tell you what your dream was, king, and I'm going to tell you, number two, what it means. The dream is of a gigantic statue. And it's interesting because it starts off, obviously, this is a statue that talks about kingdoms of the world. And as we go down from the head to the toes, we go further ahead in time. And this is very countercultural because it's interesting. We have this view of human history. We think things are getting better and better over history, over time. The further we go, the greater civilization advances. But that's not necessarily the biblical worldview, because in the biblical worldview, it seems like things start off great, and at times they only get worse. Human depravity gets worse and worse and worse. And this is what we see in the book of Genesis. Things get so bad, God destroys the world with a flood and has to start over again. And we see that just because we have more technology, we have more know-how, this doesn't necessarily mean that we have a lot of wisdom. And this is what Daniel is all about. Daniel is really the man of wisdom, and it's really a book of wisdom. So here's the dream. Daniel describes this statue that has a head of gold, arms and chest made of silver, a belly and thighs of bronze, and then the legs are iron and the feet are iron mixed with clay. And so these are kingdoms of the world. And then there's another character that's in this dream too. And the character is this rock, a rock that smashes into the feet of the statue, which is, you know, obviously where it's at its weakest point, clay mixed with iron. And the statue is destroyed. The wind blows it away. Then the rock becomes this massive mountain that fills the whole world. Okay, so let's take a look at the statue. Daniel says to the king, in the statue in your dream, you are the head of gold. You are that. This is the best. You know, this is as good as it gets. And King Nebuchadnezzar is probably like, wow, I really like this guy. He's telling me that I am primo here. And so of the metals, the composition of the statue, this is the best material. It goes from gold to silver to bronze to iron. And then iron mixed with clay. So he at this point, he probably doesn't even care what's going to happen. You know, eventually he knows at some point he's going to die. There'll be worse kingdoms that come after him. But right now, he's on top. And God has allowed this to happen. God has allowed this pagan king to get control. And that's one of the big themes of Daniel, that despite the way things look to human eyes, God is still sovereign. He's still on the throne. He's still ultimately in control of human history, despite all the sinfulness that abounds in the world. So the head of gold is Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian kingdom. And then as we move down, the arms and the chest made out of silver, that refers to the Persian Empire, King Cyrus, the Medo-Persian Empire. Then moving further down, the belly and the thighs made of bronze, that refers to the kingdom of the Greeks, led by Alexander the Great and his conquest of the world that was going to come next. And then the legs of iron on the statue, that's the Roman Empire. And it's at this time, and it's funny because you think of the Roman Empire as being the most powerful advanced civilization, but in terms of what it's made of, iron is very strong. It can smash a lot of things, but we see that ultimately it is destroyed by this big stone. And what is the stone? Well, I think you probably already guessed, but we're going to reveal it in just a minute. So the Roman Empire represents the legs of iron. So what does the king say to this? When Daniel explains the dream to him or reveals it to him, he's overwhelmed. And so he falls down and he actually worships it. And a lot of people think he's worshiping Daniel. He's worshiping him as some sort of a living God for revealing the dream. But I don't think that's what he's doing. I don't think that's what he's doing at all. And in the New Testament, there was a time when St. Paul and St. Barnabas, they were preaching in Lystra. And you can read about this in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 14. People actually think that they are living gods. They heal this guy who's lame, and the people say, oh my goodness, it's Zeus and Hermes. Let's worship them. And they're like, no, don't do this. A lot of people would be tempted to get that kind of adulation, but they tear their clothes, they tear their garments. No. That's blasphemy. We are just men like you. But really what's going on here is that King Nebuchadnezzar is actually acknowledging the God of Daniel. And this happened also in the past. Speaking of Alexander the Great, there was a time when Alexander the Great bowed down before the high priest of God in Jerusalem, the Jewish high priest. And when people asked him, why are you doing this? He said, it was not before him that I bowed down and prostrated myself, but before the God of whom he has the honor to be the high priest. And that's what's going on with King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. Don't be fooled here. He doesn't convert to becoming a follower of the true and living God. Remember, he's a polytheist, worships many gods. He's just adding one more to his repertoire. He doesn't quite get it. But what he does say about Daniel's God is that he is God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries. So he's getting closer to the truth, but he's not going to quite get there. And we'll see that in the next chapter of Daniel. But for the reader, as scholar Tremper Longman says, for Jews who are reading this book long ago, and even for Christians today, when you read about the most powerful pagan ruler in the world lying prostrate on the floor before an exiled Jew, wow, that would have caused chills of excitement and the flames of hope to rise in the hearts of those who believed in the God of Daniel. So what about today? You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. How can we find that kind of wisdom today? Well, St. Paul was a very, very well-trained guy. He was obviously a rabbi. He studied under Gamaliel. He lived an incredible intellectual life, but he didn't quite have the full picture about God. God had to reveal it to him on the Damascus Road experience where he encountered Christ, totally transformed his life. And so eventually Paul realized that the true wisdom comes from a relationship with Jesus. And it's the Spirit of God communing with him that enabled him to become truly wise. And he wrote about this in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, when St. Paul said, "The Spirit searches all things, even the deep things of God. Who among men knows the thoughts of a man except the man's spirit within him? In the same way, no one knows the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God." He goes on to say, "We have the mind of Christ." That's something that you and I can really take from this. We have the mind of Christ. We've got a relationship with Jesus through prayer. We can get to know him. We can commune with him. We can talk to him. He talks back to us when we read the scriptures. I do think at times he still communicates with people through dreams, but mostly he communicates with us his truth through his word, through the scriptures, through the teaching of the church. And then we get the power of Christ from the sacraments, including the Eucharist, which is Christ himself, to be able to actually live that out. That's really the source of wisdom today. Christ in his word and in his sacraments. And so that's how we get this incredible wisdom from God, to be able to live the way he wants us to in this world and be wise, just as Daniel was, because we too have to live among many people who do not know him. Okay, we've got to drop it off right there. This is The Faith Explained with Cale Clark. In the next episode, we'll continue with this exciting book of Daniel. It's in the readings all this week as we get ready for the season of Advent, as we prepare for the coming of Jesus Christ. You can find the podcast at relevantradio.com and also on the Relevant Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts, and share them with a friend. Tell people about this show. Until next time, God bless you.
You know, the word is spreading around America. This is the go-to place if you've got a prayer and you want the whole country praying for it. So I invite people to join us every night for the Family Rosary Across America Live.
7 p.m. Central.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media.
Relevant Radio.